Bonsoir, je m'appelle Barbara Romanovitch, je suis professeure honoraire au Collège de France depuis le mois d'octobre. Et je m'occupais de la chaire de physique de l'intérieur de la Terre. Et je suis ici pour vous présenter Dominique Weiss, qui est professeure à l'Université de Californie, Colombie-Britannique, pardon, où elle détient la chaire de géochimie du manteau terrestre. Elle est professeure depuis 2002, mais à l'origine, elle est belge, elle parle très bien français, et elle a fait ses études jusqu'à la licence en Belgique. Elle est aussi fellow de la Société Royale, l'Académie Royale de Canada, et c'est une géochimiste qui s'intéresse à beaucoup de sujets différents, mais en particulier à la géochimie des points chauds, comme celui de Hawaï dont elle va nous parler aujourd'hui, et donc pour essayer de comprendre la dynamique de la Terre profonde. Elle s'intéresse aussi à la géochimie des arcs insulaires, et elle nous en parlera demain, à la même heure. Et elle s'est lancée depuis quelques temps dans des problèmes d'application de la géochimie aux problèmes environnementaux dont elle nous parlera la semaine prochaine, donc application à divers sujets dans ce domaine. Donc voilà, je vais lui laisser la parole pour nous parler du point chaud de Hawaï et de l'origine de ces signatures géochimiques. Dominique est là pour pratiquement un mois. Elle va donner un cycle de 4 conférences ici au Collège de France, 2 cette semaine et 2 la semaine prochaine. Et ensuite, et sinon, elle a un bureau à l'Institut de physique du Dôme de Paris, si jamais vous voulez la voir. C'est le bureau 272, je crois.
Merci, Barbara. Barbara and I decided that I was going to speak in English because usually the audience is diverse. Obviously, I can speak French or English, although I would probably stumble in a talk. I want to thank the Collège de France for the invitation, and I also want to thank the Peter Wall Institute for Advanced Studies. There is a bilateral agreement between Peter Wall and Collège de France, and they paid for my trip, my plane trip. So we are going to Hawaii, and feel free to interrupt me if you have any question. I don't know what the habit is, but it's probably better. I'm going to talk about 3 main topics: mantle geochemistry, mantle plumes, and why Hawaii. People are tired of Hawaii. It's still a very, I'm going to hopefully convince you that it's a very interesting topic to work on. So mantle geochemistry, what do we know about the mantle? Well, we actually have to use indirect approach. And one of the key approach is to use some of these little islands that tells us a lot about the chemistry of the Earth's mantle. And Daly already described that almost 100 years ago, basically by stating that by studying these very little islands in the middle of the oceans, we'll know more about the mantle, completely out of proportion to the area. Why is the mantle important? It's 80% of the volume of the Earth. It doesn't look like it on this diagram, but when you calculate the volume, 84%, thicker than 2,800 kilometers. That looks like a lot. That looks like very little. Wow. From Paris, you have to drive to Moscow to reach the bottom of the mantle at the interface with the core. So that's not negligible. But if we look, how can we sample the mantle? If we look at the deepest hole that was drilled on Earth, it's the Kola hole, it was 12 kilometers depth. So it's basically the equivalent of a medical doctor trying to understand how the body works by scratching the skin. That doesn't work very well. So people are fascinated by trying to drill the mantle, especially using the ocean drilling program, and people are trying, scientists are trying to reach where it's the shallowest, and most of the time these attempts failed. Here they were trying to drill in the Southwest Indian Ridge, and it didn't work. So what can we do? We use proxy, and that's where geochemistry comes into play. I prefer to work on lavas, mostly because they crystallize and their composition basically, or their isotopic ratios, reflect the composition of the source. It's basically a direct proxy. When you work with a xenolith, such as here, it's a little bit more complicated because the minerals can fractionate. Why? So when we study oceanic islands, what are we finding? We're finding that they have different isotopic composition. So I'm going to talk a lot about these isotopes. Basically, what you need to remember is that the integration over a long time life, because they reflect a radioactive decay into a radiogenic product, and it's a time-integrated signature. We have here strontium isotope versus lead isotopes, and all I want to emphasize here is that when you look at different groups of islands from different locations, they have different signatures. I'm going to come back to that. The first question is, how come there is such heterogeneity? And today the focus will be on Hawaii, which is here on these red dots. Why these lavas and these mantle plumes reflect the signature of the deep mantle is summarized in these cartoons. Basically, you have an instability at the limit of the core mantle boundary, that some material is coming up to the surface and forming the islands. Because the upper surface is moving, the lithosphere is moving, you end up with chain of islands. The decompression, as the material comes up, leads to melting, and we form lava. The melting happens basically at shallow depths. And an important point here is that the physical distribution around of the parameters in the mantle plume are concentric. That is, the temperature distribution is concentric, the velocity is concentric, or at least that's what we think. You'll see why it's important. So now, the material from the mantle plumes come from down deep. How is it heterogeneous? One hypothesis which was put forward here a while ago by Mr. Hoffman, who is here, is it's actually coming back for way longer. It's 1985. It's recycling of material that has been at the surface. And this recycling is coming from the fact that the subduction zone, and we'll talk about that process tomorrow, is bringing down into the mantle material that was at the surface. And that material that has been at the surface is coming back through the mantle plume. Now, how do we know this is actually happening? There were a lot of debates about that in the early 2000s. If you image, for instance, the Farallon plate here across South America, you can identify in this diagram where the different colors reflect the velocities of the seismic waves. When it's blue, it's faster. It means it's colder material. When it's red, it's slow, it's hotter. And you can basically identify the Farallon plate going under the whole Central America. The geometry is not always that simple. You can see various complexities. But the bottom line is that the seismologists can identify thermal anomalies that are reflecting material going down into the mantle. The other thing is that if we calculate how much sediment and how much oceanic crust is recycled into the mantle, those are obviously back of the envelopes, big calculation, there's between 0.3 and 0.7 cubic kilometer per year of sediment subducting, which means that in 3 billion years, it's basically the equivalent of subducting about a third of the volume of the modern continent. That is huge. Now, if we look at the oceanic crust, there is way more material subducting, about 20 cubic kilometers per year, which is, in 3 billion years, equivalent to about 5% of the mantle mass. The conclusion is that when we look at these numbers, it is not surprising that the mantle is indeed heterogeneous. And modeling of these anomalies into the mantles lead to diagram like this. After 4.5 billion years of mixing, you can see various mixture of both recycled and also primordial material into the mantle. So, yeah, well, that's the model of Maxim in the age of the Earth. That's his calculation. Don't blame me. It's 4.567. So let's come back to this diagram, and I'm going to use this a few times. What we see here, I want to focus on these, what we call the end members. And the trends in this diagram, and that's modified from Bill White, is basically corresponding to a mixing between something that's an average mantle and end member component. We have here the enriched mantle number one, which is defined by two groups of islands. We have Hawaii and Pitcairn, and Kerguelen and Earth. Clearly there are two differences, but that's enriched mantle one. Enriched mantle two, basically going vertical here, so high strontium, little variation in lead. And then we have the high mu that's characterized by high uranium lead, hence very elevated lead isotopic ratios. If you're trying to find a coherency among these group of islands and their location, there is none in the absolute. There is one though, which is, or two, the first important observation reflected by this VS perturbation at the bottom of the mantle, so it's a projection. What you can see is most of the big hotspots are located at these at the edge of this large low shear velocity province. So that's, again, seismic velocity anomalies. There is the Pacific LLSVP and there is the African LLSVP. The two groups of enriched mantle one islands are Hawaii and Pitcairn located in the Pacific, and Kerguelen and Tristan located on the extreme end of the African LLSVP. That's just a focus on most of the islands. One important factor, too, is that we have the and the location of these enriched mantle component and members. The red is the hotspot track. You also have what's called oceanic flood basalts and continental flood basalts when they erupt across the continents. Those are large volume of lavas exposed by mantle plume. We can look at other things. I'm trying to advocate why we need to study the mantle here. And what you can see is here we have the hotspot flux. I want to emphasize that Hawaii here is by far the mantle plume with the highest plume flux. It's about 100 times higher than some of the other ones. You can also see that a lot of the mantle plume in the Pacific have a larger production than in the Atlantic, for instance. Computer modeling Now, how do we know that these mantle plumes sample deep material? I took this example. I could have taken many more recent ones. I just happened to like this one, mostly that you can trace the anomaly. So again, warmer colors show reflect more warmer temperature, slower waves, and potentially you can image the system all the way down to the core mantle boundary. The more we look at that, and if you have any question about this modeling, Barbara is going to be way better placed than me to answer this question, the more we find you can have models, but we're not fully there yet. Why are we going to go to Hawaii? Don't tell me you want to go to the beach in Hawaii. It's not very interesting, and it's also very dangerous. It turns out that the Hawaiian beaches are some of the most dangerous beaches in the world. There are many people dying. I'm not joking. There are a lot of currents, and also there are sharp basalts everywhere, and there are usually about 10 people dying swimming in Hawaii just because there are big currents and things like that. Sharks, yes. Clearly, the tourism agencies don't want to advertise that. I happen to like going to Hawaii because when you go away from the beaches, there are very few people. You have beautiful sceneries like here in the Waimea Canyon, what people call the Grand Canyon of Hawaii. You don't find that many people in there, and it's very beautiful. So I'm going to run through these ponds through the talk and tell you a few more things about Hawaii. So large, I already showed you the comparison with the other mantle plumes. Hawaii has a very, very large plume flux. You can see also here in the classical mantle plume model where you have a big head coming that leads to these oceanic plateau or continental flood basalts, the highest production rate is in the early products. Turns out that Hawaii, you have the opposite, as shown here as a distance from Kilauea. So Kilauea is here, it's the active volcano. You go away, you basically go away, you go towards older age, it's about 45 million years here. And what you can see is as the volcanism becomes younger, the volume flux, so the magma production, is getting bigger and bigger. And that's against all the models of mantle plumes. So there are not many explanations about that. We have one. We'll see if it stands. Hawaii is about 28,000 square kilometers. That's about the size of Belgium. Okay, you all think Belgium is minuscule. I agree with you. But still, it's one of the biggest islands. The other thing about Hawaii is there are two chains of volcanoes, geographical chain of volcanoes, named because of the largest volcano, the Loa Trent for Mauna Loa and the Kea Trent for Mauna Kea. They're about 50 kilometers apart, and it turns out that in this classical strontium lead diagram, you can see that the lavas have different isotopic signatures. So that reflects different composition of the source. 50 kilometers away, the same mantle plumes, that was a big puzzle. Just to give you an idea of how big Hawaii is, I like to use this schematic diagram where you have a mountains from the space with the depths, and when you take Hawaii from the bottom of the ocean, so all the way down to the sea bottom, it's more than 10,000 meters high. That means it's higher than Everest. And Katrina seemed to have made an impression about that because you remember that when we looked at the topo map today. Obviously, if you just look above sea level, it's a completely biased perspective, but the volume of magma production in Hawaii is very high. Another indication of the production is this, what's called the swell, the seawater, seafloor belt. It's about a kilometer high, and it's about 1,000 kilometers wide. So if you look at the cross-section along here obviously with a very exaggerated vertical scale, you can see that this bulge is about 1,000 kilometers wide and 1 kilometer high. That's just the impact of the mantle plume under the lithosphere. Very big impact. Okay, so what are we going to learn now with the existence of these two trends? First, we can look at the Big Island. And the Big Island, it's called the Big Island because it's the largest one, it's also the youngest one, has five volcanoes on land: Kohala, Mauna Kea, and Kilauea on the Kea side, and then Walalai, Mauna Loa, and so that's on the islands. There is a volcano underwater, which is Lohiri. It's being constructed, and the modeling is that it's going to come to the surface in about 500,000-600,000 years, in light of the current activity. Each volcano has a lifespan of about 1 million years. So that's, as the lithosphere is moving, the mantle plume is coming up, the activity is about a million years, and it's reflected here on this diagram of magma supply rate in cubic million cubic meters per year. And what I want to emphasize is the shield stage. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. I don't want to talk about the later stage that are post-shield, the very small volume, or the pre-shield. And what does it look like? At the end of the day, or at the beginning of the day, I'm a geologist. I'm trained to do field geology, and I love doing that. That's one of the reasons I moved to Canada. So I like to go collect the samples, and because you also know what you're handling. That's what it looks like. Major lava flows, so fluid that they actually drape like a, custard sauce or something like that. While the, the smaller volumes define, they're most viscous, the alkali basalts, they define nice looking cones. That's not even in the scale of magma supply rate. That's secondary, or volcanism that comes way after the fact, and it's tiny, tiny volume. We're not going to look at any of these. They don't tell you what I think is important about the mantle plume. I'm saying, the mantle plume source. I'm not saying they're not interesting to study. What I'm saying is that if you compare the two, you're mixing apples and oranges. To give you an idea, although there's no scale, this is gigantic. And you wonder why people working on Hawaii need new shoes every time they go do field work. You spend a day on these RR lava, and basically your soles are shredded. Actually, or if you go look at the volcano erupting, happened to melt my sole the last time. Brand new shoes, they were done in a day. I didn't burn myself, but I wasn't very proud. 5 million years, what happened? Well, so this is the Big Island, but 5 million years of erosion in tropical climate. Kauai is also the places where it rains the most on Earth. You get beautiful erosion. We learned a lot about Hawaii through the Hawaiian Scientific Drilling Project. The idea was, again, to drill the mantle. It wasn't that simple. The pilot program went to about 1 kilometer. The second phase went to 3 kilometers, and then another 500 meters. So total 3.5 kilometers. The idea was to go drill into the mantle itself. They never reached that because it wasn't easy. One key information of this study was to have age model the evolution of composition through age. It turns out that tholeitic basalts are not very easy to date by the argon-argon system. Some of this data is the pooling of 20 samples. But in short, you start with basically recent lavas at the top, and you reach 600,000-700,000 years at the bottom. That's pretty good to study the evolution of a volcano. We're going to look at the evolution of the shield basalts on the island for 4.5 million years, see where it takes us, and then go back in time. Turns out that's pretty challenging. We went and sampled every big volcano on the islands, basically going from 0 to 5 million years in Kauai. One very important thing, I'm a geochemist, I'm picky. And you end up being picky in everything you do, including in not mixing butter and jam on your knife, or at least I don't. But you want the best data possible. We can argue what's the best data, what's representative of the source, but I want to emphasize that because we are in the oceans, because there are many sources of pollution, you want to clean up your samples of what's not the primary signature. So we do sequential acid leaching, and then we separate the element we want to analyze, and we do that either on a plasma instrument or on a thermo instrument to have good data. What does that show us? Instead of having what I call potatoes in the past, you end up with data that define lines in a lead diagram, which basically represent mixing between heterogeneities here in the surface of these lavas. So when we look at these shield basalts, what we have, and we have about 700 samples here, on the lower side we have cooler color, nothing to do with temperature of the source, but just to make a difference, and square or diamonds and things like that. On the Kea side, we have warm colors. There is a sharp difference that was originally identified by Abushami et al. In 2005, and that's the line here. Big difference. When we look at individual volcanoes, on each trend, we also see that on the Kea side, most of the volcanoes basically intersect up there, while on the Kea side, while on the lower side, they basically rotate here on the average of Mauna Loa today, with one exception here in Koolo and Lanai. Basically, the difference on both sides reflects a difference here. It's a thorium-uranium ratio, which is measured by the radiogenic lead value, a proxy of thorium-uranium. So that's the difference in the source between the lower side and the Kea side, which you see here. Again, distance from Kilauea. You can see here the lower side with a higher radiogenic lead value than on the Kea side. A lot of discussions about the source of this. We came up with an idea, which is that the enriched side of Loa is coming from the fact that it's tapping the large low shear velocity province in the Pacific Ocean, while Kea is sampling the average Pacific mantle. Now, to move forward, I think as geochemists, we have reached our limits. We can use other systems, but I love this diagram. We need to break boundaries. That is, we need to be able to talk to each other. And for those of you who have a petrology background, you will remember that there is a thermal boundary here and that you don't cross this. It's basically the same between geochemists and geophysicists. It's like we're talking different language. So to make progress, I'm arguing that we need to learn better to understand each other, exchange our ideas, and see how we can find point of intersection. That's what my students Lauren tried to do, and I would say relatively successfully, just to give you an example of these end members. So we went back to Hawaii. mostly because we were not satisfied with some of our sample collections. We went back to Kauai. Kauai is the oldest island. It's 5 million years. It is not simple to sample, as shown here by the relief. I could barely stand up to take the photo. The wind was so strong, but it was fun. So that's that same data plus new data. And I want, again, this is a Bouchamy et al.'s line. The difference is pretty striking between the Kea site and the Loa site. I'm not going to talk about this today, but we're revisiting Koolo. West Maui and East Molokai always bother me, mostly because you can see there is a difference here between these two islands and Mauna Kea at the Big Island, basically, as you go back in time. That's the slope here for West Maui, East Molokai. Then you have Kohala, where the slope among the data crosses the boundary. And so I tried to take a different perspective, and we looked at the statistical distribution of all this data. And you can model, actually, six groups. We did various approaches, PCA, and four different approaches. We always end up with the same conclusion. There are six different groups that are here defined at the 95% confidence level and that are independent of each other. What that shows us is that within each group, I mean Loa or Kea, we have finer distinction. And some of the islands we wanted to revisit here is Lohihi. Lohihi is actually, so this is the most recent volcano, it has a very unique signature that I'm going to show you doesn't exist past 1 million years. Kohala and Haleakala are here, intermediate. And so just for location, Kohala is on the Big Island, Haleakala is on Maui, and West Maui here plots here. Very different signature at a very fine scale. So just to show you the difference, these are best fit line and constraints statistically for Kea and East Molokai, West Maui, very different signature. So if we put that on a bigger scale, on the map, this is what we see. We see first that the Loa component is actually present everywhere. The enriched Loa exists only here, so that's Koolo, Lanai, and Kaualawe. It's here. Lohihi is this tiny bit, very recent, while on the Kea side, you have transitional Kea and modern Kea, if you want. There is actually very little of old Kea on the island. That's very puzzling because when you go back in time, from 5 million years to 80 million years, Kea is what dominates. Now, if we look at the volumes of the individual volcano, what I want to emphasize in this diagram is the fact, so the size of the circle here on each volcano reflects the relative volume, that the Loa site is by far more productive than the Kea site. And then if we compare this on a, just by a trend, Kea trend here and Loa trend here, only for the island. This is the difference in a radiogenic lead. Again, if you needed to be convinced that the signature is very different. So in time, all this data, over 800 samples of radiogenic lead versus distance. So today is here. We go back in time to 5 million years, the Kea trend and the Loa trend. Nothing new here, it's just confirming the difference, but also the fact that the transitional Kea here is actually distinct from what we see on the Big Island and from Haleakala and Kohala in between. So we came up with this model that I'm trying to match a sketch diagram with what, and that, this is the classical Noah paper by French and Romanovich in 2015. The Hawaiian mantle plume is here, originating on the side of the Pacific LLSVP, with the Kea side sampling the Pacific LLSVP, and the lower side sampling the Pacific LLSVP, and the Kea side sampling the average Pacific. Turns out that this is a little more complicated. Not going to talk about that today, but we can see more heterogeneities in there. The more refined model of this idea with an interpretation of Cynthia's Fanetani's model, where we have our blobs of heterogeneities going into the mantle plume. Now, I think you're convinced that there is a difference between the two, the Kea trend and the lower trend. That's the lower trend is enriched because it sampled the Pacific LLSVP. There are six groups, statistically different, but we can also see that there are, so there, there are the major Kea and lower group, but then within each group we have finer difference. The lower trend is more heterogeneous and has multiple compositional components. Now, there are not very many islands, and if you had told me 15 years ago that I was going to reanalyze that many samples, I would have said, no way, this is completely crazy. But we need that much data to be able to do these good statistical analyses. Now, the question is, we focused on this tiny bit, history of the island. If we go back in time, we can go back 81 million years all the way there, basically to Kamchatka. You can see here, that's the bend. That's when you really start to be a big increase in volume. Where is this coming from? And what do we know about the compositions of these islands? I mean, not islands anymore, they're seamounts. It turns out that very little work had been done on the Northwest Hawaiian Ridge, so this whole part. The Emperor seamounts had been sampled by ODP, and they mostly have a Kea signature. Here, very little work was done. It turns out that most of the samples existed in collection. And you can see that as you go away from Kilauea to the bend, you have a very nice correlation between the distance and the age, which is directly correlated to the velocity of the plate. All these samples existed, and that's the thesis of Lauren Harrison. We're back into our diagram. Now you can see the scale has changed. We are in lead-lead. We have the lower side, the Kea side. You can see the Northwest Hawaiian Ridge here in diamonds, and the Emperor seamounts in triangles. Now, I want to emphasize that this is not an easy thing to do. And this has nothing to do with pride or anything. It's actually something quite funny, and I won't even try to pretend to pronounce that name. This is the Northwest Hawaiian Ridge. This is a marine national monument that was actually made by Bush, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And interestingly, it also, so that's what's shown on the first slide, it has made bigger. All this to say is that it's impossible to go resample these. So we have to rely on collection and previous dredge samples and things like that. Now, if we look at our diagram here, what are we seeing as we go back in time? And I'm going to go from the island. We have here the Big Island. So all this is data from the Big Island. And what you can see is that you have Lauri in here, And as you go towards older lavas, none of these compositions exist anymore. So the low E component exists only for less than a million years. For between 1 and 5.5 million years, you have all these compositions. And as you go back in time, the Northwest Hawaiian Ridge, you have mostly Kea composition, but a couple of enriched composition. And here are the Emperor Seamounts, which have a very, you can see right away, you don't need to be a geochemist to see that the signature is very different. It's, you have an Hawaiian mantle plume signature, but you also have lower values which reflect a depleted mantle composition. So in time, today, going back to 81 million years, we're looking at two things here. We have the volume flux, and we have the radiogenic lead. You can see here on the Emperor Seamount, those are literature data, not very much data. It's all relying on ODP cores, but basically little variation in the radiogenic lead, while as you go along the Northwest Hawaiian Ridge, the ratio increases, and then becomes even more, it increases even more in LOA, but you also have more diversity. You have a very enriched LOA there in Daiyaku-chi, but we're not going to go into these details. What's interesting is that these variations in geochemical signature are also following the same trend than the volume flux. So remember, Hawaii is going the opposite of the mantle plume models. The plume flux increases as you becoming younger. And our interpretation, actually, is that this is the apparition of the lower component in the mantle plume. And that's what's modeled here. So at the beginning, 80 and something million years, we have the Pacific LLSVP. We have the formation of the Hawaiian mantle plume. The Emperor Seamounts are basically only sampling the average Pacific mantle, Kea component. The Northwest Hawaiian Ridge, so 40 million years, you start having intermittent LOA component by sampling of some material into the Pacific LLSVP. And then on the island, as we have seen, LOA dominates, and you have a lot of sampling here of the Pacific LLSVP. So our interpretation is that the Hawaii is a unique mantle plume because it's actually, I won't call it two mantle plumes, but it's basically tapping another source. So the implication is that the mantle plumes are dynamic and can change composition with time. The Hawaiian plume drifts, as documented by the geophysicist, and sample multiple domains, which has impact on the geochemistry, the magmatic flux, and the volcanic propagation rate. The enriched signature is related to the presence of enriched recycled continental material. Now, I didn't go into this, but at the beginning, I showed you the difference between Kerguelen and Hurd and Hawaiian Pitcairn. Now, it's only four mantle plumes, but the signature is different. The two mantle plumes associated with the African LLSVP are slightly more enriched. Does that mean that the African LLSVP has all the material recycled? We need to go resample Kerguelen and I'm not going, but anybody interested, that's how you'll find the answer. The appearance of the LOA signature early on the Northwest Hawaiian Ridge, that is about 50 million years ago, show that the LLSVP are long-lived features. I don't think anybody will argue about that, but that's important, and that they play a significant role in the signature of strong mantle plumes. So to finish, that's the cartoon version of what we think. We have the Pacific LLSVP. We have the LOA side, the Kea side, the various, the sampling. Let's do a cross-section here. How do we envision that? And obviously, we need you geophysicists to get way better resolution down there to confirm that this model works, where the LOA site is sampling the LLSVP mixed with KEA components. I'm not arguing this. While on the KEA site, you have the deep Pacific mantle, but you also have small heterogeneities that indicate the differences. Let's skip this because that's a... So this is what the geophysicists show. Obviously, we all need a better resolution. We need a better resolution with our geochemistry. They need a better resolution with their seismic imaging. But we start to see a more refined view of the Earth mantle, leading to models like this, showing various perturbations related to the presence of different material at the in the mantle and potentially more accumulated at the core mantle boundary. What's next? Well, look at some of these islands in more detail. One can't say that it's an unpleasant place to work. Kauai is especially critical because it's at the inflection here where the plume flux becomes very big. It's also where the LOA component appears significantly. Now that's Kauai sampling. 5 million years tropical climate, already showed you the Napali coast, but that's basically what it does to a basalt. It's not easy to have good data. And then one thing that we want to look, we are looking at in fine details, it's this very enriched 10 member here in Hawaii. It's here in Makapu. That deserves a clear, detailed study. So I hope I convince you that why is it a fun place to work? It allows us to link deep mantle and geochemistry, magma flux and source components, and also look at the enriched mantle component. Thank you very much.